Hello, freaks, and welcome to Radical Research. This is episode 135. We're calling this one Course Corrections. We'll explain the concept in just a bit, just to get a little bit of house cleaning out of the way. Before the house cleaning, as ever, I have with me Hunter Ginn, Session Hate Hammers. How's it going?
Going well.
Yeah.
Good morning, everyone,
Good
actually.
morning. Yeah, we're doing a morning show. We do it rarely, but every time we do, we mention it because I feel like we like it and wish
It's
we could.
always fun when we do a Saturday morning show. We did
Yeah.
our Roadrunner episode on a Saturday morning.
Oh, the
The
believer, cynic,
Pestilent Cynic thing, yeah.
pestilence one. That's right. That's right. We've done a few morning episodes and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
First of all, I think it's fitting to announce, if I can just get rid of my humility for a second, I'm very proud that the Voivod book is finally available for pre-order. I know I'd been promising this thing since, I don't know, 3 years ago, but it's finally done after basically about 5 years of work and fits and starts. It's called Always Moving, The Strange Multiverse of Voivod. It's 540 pages long. It's got a 12-page color section. It weighs almost 3 pounds. It's got 53 footnotes. It's got French flaps, as all my books do. I insist on this. And I'm really proud of it. And it's a larger book. It's 7.75 inches by 10 inches. It's a larger book. I just kind of wanted to go all out with this. Not that my other books weren't deserving of going all out. I feel like I did the best I could on those, but this was a very, very special project in so many ways. Like Fate's Warning, a band I've been listening to since my early to mid-teens, and just very happy with it. You can go to the revamped Radical Research site to pre-order it. It's radicalresearch.org/voivod. That should get you there. We will certainly have the link in the show notes. I know a lot of you have already pre-ordered, and I'm really, really happy with the response so far. It went on sale about 5 days ago from this recording anyway. I'm not sure when this episode will come out, but thank you, everybody, for your enthusiasm and really glad to have it out. But it's on the revamped Radical Research site. We've got a few new tweaks to that site. I think it's looking a lot better. I think it reads a lot better. So if you haven't checked our site out in a while, please go there. You can, of course, find every single episode of Radical Research there. And yeah, that's that. Thanks, Hunter, for Hunter read some of the Voivod book as it was coming around to sort of like final draft. And you had a lot of good suggestions for me, things that I think helped make a few chapters better. Your enthusiasm was very helpful because I show my books to very, very, very few people as I'm working on them. And you're one of the few that I think you've probably seen all my books before publication. And the reason is I trust you and I trust your opinion. So thank you for your part in that.
The honor is mine. And this
Let's.
was a book that I've wanted to read for a very long time, and no one wrote it until you. So.
Right. Well, thank you. I'm happy with it. I can't wait to share it with all Voivodians out there. So again, thanks everybody for your enthusiasm. Radicalresearch.org/voivod. That's the book. There it is. You can pre-order. Should be shipping around November 17th. Now, our Patreon subscribers continues to grow. We have been joined by four since the last episode. I want to name John Christensen for his contribution. Thank you. Actually, Jason Hundy of Requiem Podcast is now a subscriber, which is really above and beyond because Requiem
That's an honor.
Podcast, yeah, that's a
Yeah.
real honor because Requiem Podcast is kind of, a very early and successful and influential podcast in the metal world. So thanks, Jason. And of course, we have to mention his compatriot, Mark, as well. Mark Rudolph, great dudes. But thanks, Jason, for throwing a couple bucks our way every month. That's just so appreciated. A guy named Danny F. And I thought this was maybe my friend Danny Fonaro, which Hunter has dubbed Danny for now, but it is not. It's just another guy named Danny F. So welcome, my second friend, Danny F. I have two friends now named Danny F. Yeah, welcome, Danny F. I hope to know you better one day. And Jay Lemaire, right before this episode was recorded, checked in with a podcast contribution. You can do the same if you like what we do and want to show us your support. It's patreon.com/radicalresearchpodcast. Also, we'll have a link in the show notes. Let's get to this episode, Hunter. This is a pretty interesting one. We have a follower and now friend named Paul Stolpe. Paul wrote some in your Deserts of Hex Volume 2. He was.
Paul's become a very good friend of mine. We get together whenever I'm out on the West Coast. He is just the fucking best. Love the guy to death. He is a librarian. He is an intense listener, and I adore the guy.
Same, same.
Like you said, it was like it's one of those things. Like we meet these kindred spirits every now and then, but like Paul, when Paul and I met and got to know each other, it was like, man, this is kind of separated somewhere.
Brothers from another kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, he's great. I don't know, a few months ago or so, Paul and I were corresponding, and he had, we often get suggestions for episode ideas, and we really appreciate those. And while we appreciate them, we often don't jump on them simply because Hunter and I have so many of our own that we want to get to. But every now and then, we will go ahead and do one. There was that, was it the Rush one or the bands that sound like Rush that we kind of jumped on? I think that was a listener contribution
It
as well.
was and then we did the one with Forrest.
Oh, the shit.
Yeah, the guess what this is episode.
Oh, right. And it was there was some Rainer Lanfrumann on there.
Yeah, that was a real revelation.
The Bethlehem and Pavor guy. Paul's idea was what he called course corrections, albums that attempt to right a wrong. One of the most famous and well-known examples of that, I guess, would be Saint Anger to Death Magnetic, which we'll cover in a little bit here later. But, when a band just has what is largely perceived as a wipeout, like a really terrible album, a bad album, a terrible idea, or just a simply not very artistically successful one, they come back with something that's stronger, a little more confident, more focused the next time. And this was such an interesting idea to me because, well, it's incredibly subjective for one, right? We can get into how Hunter and I love My Dying Bride's 34.788% complete. A lot of people would consider The Light at the End of the World, the following album, the course correction from that. But we don't find that there was a need for correction. In fact, we felt the need for more in that direction by My Dying Bride, which they never did.
Wrong.
Wrong. To quote Peter Gabriel on Genesis Live, right? Remember that? So, somebody shouted out a song title, I think Giant Hogweed or something. He goes, wrong. Anyway.
I don't do it with the same panache as Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, that was pretty classic. So that's the idea, and I hope I've explained it well enough. Have I, or is there anything you want to add
I
to the
believe you have.
idea?
No, I believe you have. Yes.
And so Paul gave us a couple examples of what he was talking about. I made my own little list. Hunter's got his own little list, and we're just going to simply dive into it and just have a conversation. So yeah, the subjective nature of all this, I just want all listeners to keep that in mind because again, people like Hunter and I, there are a lot of albums out there. In Kip It's Satan by Gorgoroth is another one. I think people would think Twilight of the Idols was a course correction from that wild and experimental album, but not us. So we're not going to talk about those albums. We're not going to talk about My Dying Bride or Gorgoroth or any others that we find didn't need a correcting of course. Paul Stolpe said this in his recent communication with me. I think that we'll use this to kind of leap off, okay? He doesn't consider Vanity Nemesis by Celtic Frost a course correction.
Ooh.
End quote, but there's a strong argument that it should be. I'm in the minority that enjoys Cold Lake for what it is, but for sure, Vanity Nemesis is, if not quite a return to form, a repositioning within familiar territory for the band's fans. That's a good start to a discussion. My take on Cold Lake is that it's a not a great album, certainly not the one you and I would have wanted after Into the Pandemonium. Also, maybe not the worst album, but I will set Vanity Nemesis up as a course correction because I think that it does retain some of the Frost identity that was lost on Cold Lake. And we could talk about guitar tone alone, much
Sure,
better
that's
guitar. Yeah, because Cold Lake infamously had kind of a non-Frosty guitar tone. It just didn't sound like the band. But also the subject matter was a little more serious, a lot less dance sleazy.
Dan Sleazy. My I'm sure I've said this on this podcast before, but if I not that I have the machinery to be in pornography, but if I did. That would be my porn name, is Dan Sleazy.
Dan Sleazy. Oh man, that's awesome. And you know, some cold lake driving behind your performance. Okay, let's get that visual out of our heads. What do you think about Vanity Nemesis as a course correction, and how successful of a course correction is it? Because
It's a rerouting. I mean, and I think that's what we're really talking about is as a course correction is like you have literally veered into a ditch, and you were fortunate enough to get back onto the road. So I don't think course correction is necessarily a real achievement. It's just that you got back on your path. And Vanity Nemesis for me is that, like, you got your guitar tone back, you kind of recaptured some of the old spirit, but to my mind, it's not when I think about Great Celtic Frost, I don't think about Vanity Nemesis.
No, I don't.
I love the title.
I do love the title. I love the song Nemesis, the final track. It's almost 8 minutes, probably the heaviest and darkest on there. I could see Vanity Nemesis coming out after Pandemonium and not being as shocked, not being as let down. I think that would work. I think it would also seem drastic, but I think any change of course after Pandemonium, unless it sounded along the lines of Pandemonium, I think it would seem jarring because Pandemonium is so unique and different. I don't see how something could seem comfortable after that album if there is a change of direction of any kind, right?
Hard to imagine where any band would have gone after that.
Exactly. That you sort of have to turn around after you hit that wall. I just don't know how much deeper they could have gone with that direction, although I was hoping for it. Didn't happen. And you know, there are a lot of Paul Stolpe is one of them. Brian Grebens is another friend of the show. And just a friend. He also likes Cold Lake. And there are people out there that hold up that album. I'm fine with a lot of it. I like a lot of the riffs. I like aspects of that album. I think people listen to that album with their eyes too much.
John Holm likes a fair amount of that record.
Yeah. I mean, there are, yeah, it's.
It is unfairly judged.
This is a good time to jump to two albums that I consider. Anytime anybody says, oh, Cold Lake was the worst metal disaster in history in the genre, I always disagree. And I always bring up Octagon, which we famously covered a few episodes ago. And, you know, the course correction for Octagon was what? Destroyer of Worlds? Not a course correction.
Not a course correction. Nope.
That was a huge mess. It's not as bad as Octagon, but it's not good. So we can drop that one from the conversation. The other one I always bring up is Saint Anger, which I don't know. I think is almost worse than Octagon, and that's the biggest disaster by a band that I consider so fucking good in their heyday. I think most of us do.
I mean, I would call it an embarrassment. It's like a band that wrote some of the greatest riffs of all time, literally forgot how to write riffs.
Well, I think literally forgot how to write. It's just gone. It's
Or any.
so vacant.
Look, I, as a drummer, I am not a Lars hater. I think that Lars is, I mean, he's not a great drummer, but I think that his drumming is an integral part of Metallica's identity. And I think it was all along. But his drumming on that record, and not the snare sound, like we could talk about that all day, but like his drumming is just regressive.
Terrible. Slappity slap slap slap. It's just it's that's what it is. It sounds like that
He's
to me.
like he can't hear the riffs and play along to them.
Perfect. Well, and are there riffs? They're not very good if
No,
they
not
are.
really. Not really. Okay,
So,
fair
so we've okay, so we've pretty much determined that that's the worst album by a once great band. It's just that it's just
Nope.
the
No,
it's
it's
so
not, Jeff. No, it's
what it
not.
what is?
Lulu is the worst record by that band.
Boy, that's the thing about Saint Anger, right? You just when you thought you'd heard the worst from Metallica, they did this Lulu
Nope.
thing with, oh man,
Nope.
man. Okay,
Yep.
but okay, but let's get back to the concept here. Course correction from Saint Anger was Death Magnetic. Now, I don't love that album. I find it to be so calculated, but they had to. I'll give them credit. Because they were like, okay, let's get Rick Rubin in to help us figure this out. Let's get back to the classic Metallica type sound, which they really did. I mean, they hadn't sounded like that since I would almost say Injustice. It's not that album, but it's definitely more in keeping with classic Metallica than anything they'd done since Justice. And I like the Black Album a ton, but it wasn't even trying to go back to the Black Album
Right.
sound. It certainly, you know, dismissed a lot of the elements of Load and Reload. Had nothing to do with Saint Anger. I feel like they really got it back in a way on that album. I'm saying this more from an objective standpoint because I don't really care for the album, but I think they did a decent job of correcting course. I really do. I think they saved some face with Death Magnetic, without a question.
That's what this is about. It is not that we're saying that we like these albums necessarily. We're talking about course correction.
Right,
And
right.
I would agree with you because I do not like Death Magnetic. I mean, I think it's a, you know what it sounds like to me? A very workmanlike, serviceable metal record.
Yeah.
It's like, it's what you, it's like the meat and potatoes Metallica record that you wanted. And it sounds good. Obviously, you had a producer. And how Bob Rock like Saint Anger happened is beyond me, but
Because he's the producer of Black Album, which, you know, no matter what you think of that album, it's an amazingly produced album. So well produced. Such focused production on that.
first of all, I love that record.
Me too.
And it is a production masterpiece.
Yep.
And you know how much time and how much agony was put into that and quelling the egos. Well, Lars mostly, but like to get those performances out of them, like, and he knew those songs were good enough to do that. But yeah, I totally agree that that Death Magnetic is a successful course correction.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move on. I want to finish up with Paul Stolpe's recent texts with me to get a couple of these out of the way. They're interesting points. He said what inspired the course correction idea in the first place was he had just attempted to listen to Judas Priest Ram It Down, and he said made it barely for the first time in years, and it got me to thinking about what a course correction painkiller was. Yeah, he's not wrong at all. In fact, I think that's a double whammy with Turbo and Ram It Down. There's a few songs on each album I like a lot. But I'd say the rest of those albums are pretty bad. And Painkiller, I know you're not a big fan of Painkiller Hunter, but
I don't know why
easy.
I'm not though. Like, there's no record that I want to like more.
Okay, but easily, objectively looking at it,
Yeah, there's
you know,
no question.
That was
Dude,
one of the most.
I like Turbo more than I like Ram It Down.
Probably me too. Yeah. There's more the song because the songs I like on there I like a lot. You know, Out in the
Yeah.
Cold, Turbo Lover. Those are
Yeah.
Restless is good. There's a couple
Yeah,
on Ram It
I
Down I
don't like
like
Ram
quite
It
a.
Down much at all.
I like Blood Red Skies and Craig Zahler got my head turned around completely on Monsters of Rock. I think that's an awesome song. It's a stupid title, but man, it's a great song. But there's bad shit all over those albums. The only bad part of Painkiller, which I think one of the ultimate course corrections, quite honestly, successfully, and I'm going to agree with Paul on that one. The only problem with Painkiller is the chorus to Metal Meltdown, which is one of the dumbest fucking choruses in metal history.
Ridiculous chorus.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. It's childish.
It is childish. Yeah.
And Paul brought up another one. He said another one I was thinking of is Brave New World by Iron Maiden. I think coming off of Virtual 11, that's absolutely a triumph. Well, no doubt about it. That's a course
Yeah,
correction for you.
I should have thought about that one. Yeah.
Here's another one he brings up. This is an interesting one. I have trouble with this one. I think there's an argument for this is Paul saying this. I think there's an argument for Heaven and Hell. I like Never Say Die, but Heaven and Hell is on a whole nother level, and it was viewed as a course correction at the time, unquote. He's right about it being viewed that way. He's right about it just obviously being, it's a stronger album in many, many ways. I like it better than Never Say Die, but my problem getting there entirely to call that a course correction is that you had such a drastic lineup change with the singer. And stylistic change. It almost has to leave behind the Ozzy era to move on. I don't know if it's fair to call it a course correction. It's just a sort of a new era for them.
Makes sense.
And dude, and I love
I
Never Say, I
don't.
love Never Say Die. I can't say anything too bad
I
about it.
don't. I
Crazy.
mean, you and I've had this conversation for Jesus Christ. We're getting old, man. Like what, 24 years?
Too old.
I like some things on it. I don't love the record, and I just adore Heaven and Hell. But I totally agree with you that there's so much difference there with. Yeah, I mean. It's just a it's a different sound altogether. You know, like I agree. I wouldn't call it a course correction. It's a migration.
Migration is an excellent word. That's fantastic. Okay, so let's move on. There's two more examples Paul gives before we move on to our own lists. He makes a little mistake here. I don't know. I'm not trying to call him out. He may have forgotten about Cultosaurus Erectus by Blue Oyster Cult, but he says, while I like Mirrors a lot, even, I'd consider Fire of Unknown Origin a course correction. Now, let's just say he meant to say Cultosaurus because no, nothing
He
compares
did.
to, yeah. Fire of Unknown Origin is fantastic. Unbelievable album.
It's a perfect record.
It might as well be. Cultosaurus is also close to perfect for me. I think that's a tremendous album. But like Paul, I do like Mirrors quite a lot. I don't consider it such a failure that you need to have the idea of the course correction with it. I find Mirrors to be charming in its more slick approach. I think there's really great songs in there. There's a couple duds, but like generally not going to put it in the failure category. So it's an interesting idea that he comes up with.
The amazing thing about BOC is like, so for me, the first three records are pretty much perfect.
Yep.
They had albums that I love that all have duds.
Agents of the Fortune.
And they, no, yeah.
Even
Well,
Spectres, even
fucking
Spectres has one
Spectre,
tear
man. Dude, yeah.
going through the
But
motions.
yeah. But then you get past Mirrors. And you have two basically perfect records.
Yeah, I know. Those are again, I was going to say Phoenix Rising from the Flames. Too dramatic because I love Spectres and I love Agents and I love Mirrors. But
So do I.
if you want later BOC outside of the black and white albums, the first three, if you want later triumphs by that band, it's Cultosaurus and it's Fire. No question about it.
Totally.
Love this band. Okay, so here's the last one from Paul that I
So,
want
sorry,
to.
Marty.
Sorry, Marty. You're going to have to weigh in on this last one more than I could. That Paul brings up Leviathan, Jeff Whitehead's Leviathan. He says, on a more underground level, I've always considered Leviathan's Scar Sight at a course correction because True Traitor, True Whore is not very good, unlike everything before it. So,
I couldn't speak to that.
you couldn't speak to that. Okay.
I really only know like 10th Sublevel and then Tentacles of Horror.
Okay. Yeah, those are the ones I know best. I can't speak to Scarsighted or True Traitor either, but it's an interesting idea, and I'd love to maybe check those out again purely based on what he's saying. So I like that he threw that in there as well. You and I are now going to jump into some of the ones we had on our list that Paul didn't mention. I think first I want to get into a couple of mine, and then we'll volley back and forth. I have to bring up Judas Priest. I think they had two points of course correction in their career. The one we mentioned with, you know, Turbo slash Ram It Down into the better Painkiller. Point of Entry into Screaming for Vengeance. Point of Entry is an album that is clearly to me the weakest of that entire run from Rock and Roll to Defenders. I don't think there's almost any question that it's the weakest one. Some really bad filler songs on that album.
I don't think that anyone would question that.
A couple people do. I've run into a couple of those people out there. They should be jailed. However, I don't really support authoritarianism, so I will I'll just hold off on that. Maybe just a fine, some sort of fine for thinking Point of Entry is a great album and one of their best. However, it does have Desert Plains. It does have Heading Out to the Highway. It does have Solar Angels. Those save the album from being torn.
So I've got a number of Judas Priest records downloaded on my Spotify account for when I travel. And I've got Desert Plains and Solar Angels downloaded.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to have those.
Alone. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, by themselves. Sure. Would have made a great 12-inch single, right? A and B side.
Oh, man. Yep.
Give me that. But so after that, they do Screaming for Vengeance, which has all the fire, all the electricity and energy that Point of Entry lacked. I think every song is the worst songs in there are very good. The best ones are legendary.
And if there was nothing but Take These Chains, I wouldn't care.
I so love that you love that song because it's one of my favorites too. Such a good song.
Oh my God. It's just one of the great metal classics as far as I am concerned.
And I'm a Priest fan that, like, I'm always like, earlier the better. 70s is better than anything else. Halford was best in the 70s. But I will say, I've listened to Screaming twice in the last couple months. It was kind of a recent listen that I brought, you know, just hadn't listened to it for a couple years. Blew me away both times. And I'm really kind of coming around to this idea that maybe that's Halford's best album. He is phenomenal on that album.
I like Zoller's take on Halford is that when, in, you know, he loves the 70s stuff too, but he says that like when the music gets a little more streamlined, Halford's swagger really comes out. He has more room to stretch out.
And he's always been a singer of depth. Like he has probably four or five, six different vocal characters on an album.
And I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about Dreamer Deceiver and, you know, all that, you know, but I am a little more convinced of Zoller's take after I heard that. It's like, Yeah, I guess you're right.
I,
Like
he, I,
he
yeah, he's not
does seem
wrong.
a little more like, I don't know, chutzpah, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I just maturity, kind of just moving along with how Tipton and Downing are moving along as writers and players. I feel like, yeah, I feel like Screaming for Vengeance is one of the greatest and most successful course corrections of all time. I mean that it was made for this show and this subject, right?
Yeah, please.
The other one, maybe the greatest course correction, the one that when Paul brought this up came to mind immediately. In the first one, without any doubt, Savatage's Fight for the Rock, almost total garbage, to Hall of the Mountain King, pretty much the top of the mountain for Savatage. Hall of the Mountain King.
Probably a top 50 album for me.
Any genre?
Any genre.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I mean, it is
Yeah.
pure God.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So I
I
really not much more to
remember,
say.
like, I remember you and I had a very intense listen to that album in Stewart.
Yes.
But I listen to that album like pretty frequently, and it's just, oh my God, it's up there like with Transcendence, for me.
Yeah, all
Like,
right.
perfect fucking traditional metal record.
Like Crimson Glory. I don't want to assume everybody knows what Transcendence is,
I'm
so I'll
sorry.
just
Yeah,
say
I'm
that.
sorry. I know.
They might have been thinking
Oh, I
disembowelment.
always miss the, you know, that's what they tell me at work too, Jeff. You miss the details.
Well, some people at my past works might have said I was too detail oriented. I don't know.
Well, I'm not. Well, you know what? That's what makes radical research, isn't it?
And I wasn't thinking wide picture. I wasn't thinking big. I was drilling down too hard. Anyway, Fight for the Rock was this
Hey, that's what
infamous.
they say. That's what they tell me in my yeah, they tell me in my porn world. You're just drilling down too
Oh man. Moving on.
editing, yeah.
Fight for the Rock was this infamous, and it was on Atlantic Records, and Atlantic seemed to be the label that if you landed on it and were a metal band, they were going to turn you into something, try to attempt turn you into something commercial, and it never worked. Raven's The Pack Is Back is an excellent example. I'm not a Raven fan, but like Life's a Bitch is a way better album than Pack Is Back. You can take my word for it because I have listened to those albums back in the day when they came out. That was Atlantic. Same thing happened to Sabotage. When Fight for the Rock came out, it was like the follow-up to Power of the Night, their first major label record on Atlantic, which Power of the Night's great. Fight for the Rock was just this attempt. I think there are two cover songs on it that are bad choices. It's just this
A pain
really
in the ass.
just watered down, radio-ready Sabotage. And it's just there's a song called Hyde on there, Hyde, as in Jekyll and Hyde. That's pretty good. I think that's the only thing in the album that's good. Everything else is just dreck. It's awful. Have you listened to that entire album in its entirety?
Oh yeah.
Fight for
Yeah,
the Rock,
no,
yeah.
I'm a huge Sabotage. I mean, I've listened to, frankly, more Sabotage than I should have listened to.
Well, yeah, we try the albums that we end up not liking,
Yeah,
but
and I mean, and you know, I respect some of the Broadway stuff, but
yeah, no comment. But Hall of the Mountain King, man, again, we can't praise it enough. But
just
what a
yeah.
disparity! What a disparity! That's like a 5%er album and then 100%er. I don't know if we have an example on this entire list
I
of
don't think so.
something.
I don't think there is a starker example of a course correction than that one.
Right. Okay.
I'm looking
Yeah.
at our list right now, or my list, and I'm like, nah, there is no greater pendulum swing than those two records.
Before we move on, I do want to say Hall of the Mountain King is one of those albums. You and I have talked about these albums. Guess where I'm going with this? I will name the albums and you tell me what I'm really trying to get at here. First Metal Church album, Metallica Ride the Lightning, Sabotage Hall of the Mountain King. What do these three albums have in common?
Same producer?
No. The absolutely most perfect first side.
Yeah, you're right.
Like as good as all three of those, as great as all three of those albums are, I don't think the second sides are quite as good as the first. I really don't.
The first Metal Church record. I mean,
oh, they're all four song sides. All four song. Yeah.
Nocturnal Rites, Afterlife.
Ooh.
Do that first side. Fucking banging.
You don't listen to it in sides. Do you have it on vinyl?
Well, no, but I mean, but
you can side it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You half it. Yeah, sure. I do that with CD listens or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would agree with that. Yeah. I'll go with you on that. And Afterlife is an unbelievable album. I mean, that's something we haven't talked about much on this show, but what a great album. Highly recommend that to anyone. I don't care if you like, oh, I don't like power metal. It's a metal record. It's a heavy metal record and it's fucking heavy. It's a bit dark, but it's also melodic as hell. It's just the best thing ever. I love that. I love Afterlife. Okay, let's move on. Give me a couple of years. Throw a couple at me.
All right. Let's go Rush.
Ooh, Rush.
Roll the Bones to Counterparts.
Yeah. There's a course correction there. For one, it's easy to say, oh, there wasn't a song that had that shitty hip-hop wannabe part on Counterparts. That's obvious, but more about Roll the Bones is there's four songs on there that I like, and I think the rest is pretty much the worst thing they've ever done.
Well, when I made that choice, it had nothing to do with the hip hop part, because that's just low hanging fruit.
It is,
yeah. It's like obviously that's stupid, and no one wants to hear that. But it's just not a good record. Counterparts, you know. I think it has been unfairly characterized as this attempt for Rush to like modernize themselves during the grunge age.
Yeah.
And sure, it is stripped down and it's heavier and all. It's a great, great record.
I think the songwriting is just a little more interesting. I think by Roll the Bones, they were into this mode that they've been reaching. I think they started to reach there on Signals, Grace Under Pressure, and then they kind of just, everything got more and more and more and more streamlined for relative to other bands. You know, it's still Rush, but certainly the most streamlined and in a sense, the least interesting, the least exciting, the least adventurous, where Counterparts has songs like Between Sun and Moon or Animate, one of their best songs ever, that just have...
Animate's incredible.
The depth and the width that they used to always have. Yeah, that's a good call. I'm so with you on that.
The next one for me would be, and this is a little, I'm cheating a little bit here. So for me, Dead Boy and the Elephant Men is pretty much just Dax.
When you listen to the Dax albums, they're basically what Dead Boy might have turned into. Right.
So for me, it's going from We Are Night Sky, which was a colossal disappointment for me.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. The only good thing about it is the album cover.
Yeah. The album cover is fantastic.
Yes.
The album is just a complete shit show. Into, you know, We Sing Only for Blood and Love.
We Sing of Only Blood or Love.
We Sing or, yeah, the art. What?
I'm just going by memory. We Sing of Only Blood or Love. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, which, like, for me was a total course correction.
Oh,
not a perfect record, but like, you know, I'd give it a 85%.
Yep, same, and I'll give the next one 90%, and I'll give Seven Songs for Spiders probably a 98.
Yeah.
Like Seven Songs for Spiders is like, oh shit, he really is grabbing back to that Dead Boy era stuff right there. I really do think so. That's a Dead Boy album as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. No, good one. I wouldn't have thought of that. And I guess I wouldn't have jumped just because of the artist name.
There was a what I'd know when I was bleeding. I didn't know yet what I'd know when I was bleeding. I seem to forget what I learned when I was falling. I didn't know yet what I'd know when I was bleeding.
Here's something else. You did share a little bit of your list with me, and I want to get to the other two that I'm seeing. But here's another one you mentioned. I'm not sure I can agree with you picking this, but it's the Into Another thing. So why don't you explain that? We'll disagree for Marty's sake.
That you're welcome, Marty. And I always thought Creepy EP was just kind of lifeless, and it just sounded like toss-offs from the first record. I never really got into that EP at all, and Ignaris was just like a lightning bolt for me.
Oh, yeah. But let me ask you this, and you're right. Into Another is who we're talking about, in case you missed us. I can't even remember if we did we mention their name? Yeah, we did. I never really felt one way or the other about Creepy EP, and I think part of the reason for that is because I was into the first album when it came out, and Ignoris took me a while, and Seamless right away. The three great initial albums. Creepy EP to me always functioned as what an EP kind of can get away with functioning as, which is simply diversion, extras, extended play. That's what it stands for. It's like, do we how seriously do we have to take an EP, and can we then compare it in a forum like this where we're trying to do course correction albums? Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh,
Like
yeah.
you can have a companion EP. Like I think Haunting the Chapel and Hell Awaits are companion albums. It's just Haunting happens to be an EP. The companion album is another good show sometime. The Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules of the World.
That's fair.
Yeah, tell me about the EP thing. Like, how are you justifying?
I hold the EP standard to Alice in Chains. I think SAP and Jar of Flies are as good as anything they've ever made.
Most Alice in Chains
And
fans probably would never disagree with that.
so for me, with Creepy EP, it just fell down.
Okay.
And then they came back with this fucking, like, to me, I mean, that record meant the world to me in 1994.
Ignoris.
Yeah,
Yeah, yeah,
Ignore.
yeah. Yeah,
And
yeah,
I
yeah.
was just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe how good they've gotten.
Right. Right.
And I
Okay.
mean, I love the first record,
Yeah.
but it was just like this, it felt like a band that was, and obviously they got a major label deal, and I mean, that didn't go that well, but like, I remember listening to Ignoris the first few times, and I was like, this is a band that's going to get, like, they're going to get a shot at.
I thought they should have fared better in the 90s climate they were in, certainly.
I always felt like that too. I mean, they were like a good looking band, and they had amazing songs, and yeah, it's just a, well, like Seaweed too. Like, I remember when they got signed to a major label, it's like, man, this is gonna be their time, and it just never happened.
Yeah. Well, it was a case of a glut. It was too much
Oh
of
man,
all that, you know.
it was so much. Was so much.
I mean, I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, so I probably shouldn't mention the name Nude Swirl, but that would be another one.
Oh, totally. Totally. Like, I, dude, God, you know what? I'm gonna listen to that record later.
Wow, I love that album. The Megaforce record, yeah. Let's move on. Let's go to your next two. I'm looking at your list. Go ahead. There's a controversial one here, and then one that I'm,
Let's go to the
curious.
controversial.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cure.
The Cure. hold on, since I don't know what that is, what your course correction is, can I guess? Can I try
Maybe.
to guess?
Yeah, I'd love for you to guess.
I mean, I just don't, hold on. I don't see a weakness up until...
There's not an entire weakness. And that's why this is going to be controversial.
Okay, go ahead, because I have no guess.
And I was just looking through my, like, you were like, oh, I have seven. I was like, God damn it, I don't have seven. So I was just trying to think through things. Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me, which I really like, but has some definite weak spots.
True, true, true. Okay, I'm with you already, because then we get what? Disintegration?
You get one of the most iconic records of all time.
And one that's easily arguable as their best.
Right.
Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me suffered as because of the double album.
Too long.
Right?
Yeah. Too long. And it's got some weird jaunty things. But I mean, you go from that to Disintegration.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like one of the greatest albums of all time.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. I mean, there's definitely, okay, if a course correction is simply a skid in the road and a recovery, not a complete disaster in the ditch with, you know, all kinds of death and the Phoenix Rising, if we're talking about different levels of course collision, I think Kiss Me was probably just a little bit of a skid, a little bit of hydroplaning. And then the back on course. Yet, look, dude, I mean, the Kiss that opens up that album.
Oh,
some,
God.
I mean, dude. Some of the best Cure of all time. But I've often felt Kiss Me was just could have been better. Yeah. So that's a skid. That's a little skid.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm glad we agree.
Fun skid. One that you're like, yeah.
I mean, there's great stuff on there. And I'm glad that that record happened. But. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And then you listed Cathedral. Explain.
Supernatural Birth Machine.
Yeah.
Not
their
great.
Worst. Yeah, their worst album. And incidentally, it's the only one I'm thanked on. My least favorite Cathedral. Thank you.
And I can't fully sign off on the next one, but it's much better.
Yeah, Caravan Beyond Redemption is definitely better. I would take a few songs off immediately.
You know, I've got to take Freedom off.
You
got to
take Freedom off. That's terrible. But no, but there's a better record
there.
Yeah,
it's got some great stuff on it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about Supernatural that just, I think, and I hate to say this, and I hope he never hears this, because I love Lee Dorian so much. And we even traded tapes back in the day, and he sent me things that ended up on that Serpent's Gold album, the sort of B-sides and rarities and things. Just a wonderful guy by all accounts. And like, I think he ruined Supernatural. I think he's just off too much. I think the charm of Lee always was he was a little off, a little bit like scary off in terms of, I mean this in the best way, but a little bit tone deaf, but also really made it work and turned it into character, turned it into charm, turned it into a super personality in that band. But I think Supernatural, like, he's just not hitting it. He's just not finding the right pockets at all with his phrasing and with his choices.
It's rough, man.
And is he the big problem for you in that album, or?
Yeah. But like, also feel like the music just gets into this kind of man's ruined stoner vibe.
Yeah, it's a little lazy. It sounds lazy. A lot of the riffs.
Lazy's the word. And it's just, I don't know. It just feels like a band that doesn't really care at the moment.
And they, you know, I think that's one that was written quick. They were kind of really prolific at that point and touring a lot. And you know, I'd say Carnival Bizarre Air was a peak for them in terms of visibility.
Well, Bizarre was a fucking great record.
Yeah, and off the back of the first two, which, as far as I'm concerned, are legendary, and the EPs. Oh, let's not forget Static Magic and Soul Sacrifice.
I will never forget.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. So, yeah, really good point. And they really did skid out quite a bit and then come back with a better album. And then I think a lot of people would even agree that the one after Caravan, End Time, is really, the correction, you know.
End Time is, I've listened to End Time. I think that was on my last playlist.
It was, you listened to it recently. I know that.
God, dude, so good. So good.
So we've been doing mostly metal here, or metal-ish, metal adjacent, like Into Another. I'm going to go off on a couple here that are certainly deeply nestled in the prog world. We're big fans of Gentle Giant. I think most fans of Gentle Giant have the same opinion on Giant for a Day, their penultimate album, as being a total piece of crap. I mean, it's almost unlistenable. It's just, you talk about a band losing any kind of like enthusiasm. Like, this is just like, I don't know what happened on that album, but they regrouped for their final album, Civilian. And Civilian was a different Gentle Giant, but I think it's a really strong album. And I will always, always defend it. And it's way stronger than Giant for a Day. Do you have any experience with either of these two? Because we've talked a lot of Gentle Giant all the way up to and including Interview.
So I don't have any experience with the last one. You told me about Giant for a Day and I checked it out and it was just like almost traumatic.
Almost traumatic. That sounds like a sticker for the reissue.
And I have such envy of the brothers. It hurt me.
Yeah, no, I know. It's not good. Well, look, then use this moment to try to check out Civilian. I think you'd like it.
Okay.
Very solid album. Yeah, I think there's a lot of good stuff on that album. I think it gets short shrift. Is that what the kids say these days?
That is. That dude, Yula Garrett was the first person that I've ever heard use the phrase short shrift.
And, sounds about right.
Yep. I love that phrase.
Let me move on to an Italian prog band from the 70s that we love, La Orme, The Eye. Their first album is just kind of the typical sort of 60s hangover album. It came out in 69. It's not considered a great album by them, but it's a decent start. It's, you know, from the psychedelic age. Then we get into the meat of the La Orme discography. And this is high recommendation to all listeners if they don't know La Orme. L-E, it's L-E, which is the, and O-R-M-E, I, E-Y-E. Collage in 71, great album. Uomo di Pezza in 72, great album. Filone e Serona, 1973, legendary, perfect.
Pretty much like one of the greatest prog albums of all time.
And a pretty strong follow-up in Contrapunti. I know our buddy, your friend and mine, Ben Simpkins, that one seems to appear on his playlist sometimes. Great album. And then in 75, they released an album called Smog Magica, which I love the album cover. I always wanted to love this album. And when I finally heard it, I was so let down. Have you listened to it?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, they are a legendary band to me. Like, yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing this album. It's just like, man, what a letdown.
And then recently, 2 years ago, I'm kind of new to Tidal, new to streaming, but loving Tidal, loving how it's been enhancing my listening, actually. I was really resistant for a long time just because I'm always like that with non-physical music, but that's just, I've learned that's kind of stupid. But anyhow, I don't know how I stumbled on it, but it was actually that trip, that flight to Denver to see Agalloch at the Decibel Metal and Beer Fest a couple years ago. What was that, late 23?
Yeah.
Yeah. On that trip, I just downloaded Verita Nascoste, the follow-up to Smog Magica, 1976. I always ignored this album because I have the next one, Storia o Legenda, on vinyl. I've had it for a very long time. I've always liked it, but never found it great. So I'm going, okay, why would I listen to the album between the bad one and the one that's just pretty good and not great? Why would I do that? Never listened to Verita, 1976. On that trip, on that flight, I listened to it about three times. And then I got into my hotel room and I remember waiting for you to show up because your flight came in after mine. I listened to it two more times. Like, I was obsessed with this thing. And it's a really good album. It's a really good album and absolutely a course correction. One of the greatest course corrections in prog. It's unfortunate album that doesn't get a lot of attention and people wouldn't really think of it as like a screaming for vengeance in this world. But I'm telling you, man, Verita Nux Costa. I've since got Don Anderson into it as well. He knows.
Awesome. Yeah.
He knows. Can you think of any from the prog world off the top of your head beyond those two? There's got to be something. There's probably a Jethro Tull album in there.
Probably a Camel record in there, maybe.
Camel.
I don't know.
That might be a whole other show. Right?
Warm today, even warmer than yesterday.
Okay, so we're going to round out this conversation with three that I don't know how well they qualify, but I'm going to throw them out. Okay, Primordial, Storm Before the Calm. Course Correction being The Gathering Wilderness. I'm not saying anything's wrong with Storm Before the Calm. I just always found that to be one of the ultimate lateral steps, and also one that just wasn't as good as the previous one that was stepping to the side of.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's a really good record. Gathering Wilderness is fucking nuts. And The Coffin Ships is one of the greatest metal songs of this millennium so far.
Oh yeah, it's Primordial's Rock and Roll All Night, man. You said that about another song recently by another band that has nothing to do with Kiss. Yeah, no, but serious. But that's just got. It's not just like, oh, a better album coming in next, you know, than the previous. Storm Before the Calm is a dip simply because it comes between A Journey's End and Spirit, the Earth, and Flame, their second and third albums, which are to me. Those two are my favorite Primordials. And then you get Storm Before the Calm, which just, again, another, it was a sidestep, a lateral step. I never reach for it because I'm always going to have the stuff on the either side of it, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of my take on Storm, which is why I put it in here. So your favorite are the second and third as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, Marty, but we're going to have to agree on our two favorite Primordial albums now.
Always.
Chalk that up on your chalkboard, Marty.
They've made so much good music since then. But yeah, those two, man, are just... Ooh.
And I love Gathering Wilderness, but one thing it does, which I find that the Primordial albums after that do, is really hone in on one thing. You know, I don't think there's as much variety on Gathering Wilderness, and I think there's less so on, is it To the Nameless Dead? And then after that, I kind of fell off because they started to all kind of sound similar to me, a little too similar.
I remember Alan saying that he didn't want them to become an art house band.
Oh, he said that a long time. Yeah, on the Spirit of the Flame era.
I wish you would. Because you guys would be an amazing art house band. You know, but it's just a difference of opinion.
Let's move on to another one that I think is... it's an interesting one. I think you brought this up when we were kind of discussing this episode a couple days ago. Tonight's Decision into Last Fair Deal Gone Down by Catatonia. It's not that Tonight's Decision is a bad album. It's kind of a Storm Before the Calm thing for me, where it's a decent album, but look at what came before, which is everything they did from the early days to Discouraged Ones. And then you get this okay album, and then you get Last Fair Deal Gone Down and Viva Emptiness, which Viva is probably my favorite Catatonia album.
I have finally come around to that, Jeff. We haven't talked about it yet. The Viva's probably my favorite.
It's tough to pick because, of course, Brave Murder Day, of course, Discouraged Ones, of course, even Dance of December Souls. I don't argue with people that think that's the best. I think it's
no. Now, why would you argue with that? Yeah, those goddamn man. Yeah, those four.
So Tonight's Decision. How much of a spin out is it?
I mean, it's boring to me. It sounds like a band that has kind of exhausted that concept that started with Brave Murder Day.
Yeah.
And it just sounds dour in the worst way.
Fair enough.
It's tired. I love that they covered a Jeff Buckley song.
Oh, is it Nightmares by the Sea?
That's super cool. But like, man, when I heard Last Fair Deal, it's like, holy shit.
Not way better album.
Sounds on fire.
Yeah, they found it again there. Okay. Yes, Black Session, the last song on Tonight's Decision, is really good. There's not a whole lot of standouts. No Good Can Come of This, I like quite a bit. I think that's stands out. But yeah, it's it works in this conversation. It's not the most extreme example, certainly. But
no, it
works. Certainly not. Here's what I'm going to end on. Radiohead is a favorite band of ours, for sure. The only real disappointment for me has ever been King of Limbs. And then 5 years later, it took 5 years, but they came back with a Moonshaped Pool, which I think is astoundingly good. King of Limbs to Moonshaped Pool, definite course correction. Very strong course correction.
King of Limbs was a fucking disaster for me. And it was probably had a little bit to do where I was in my life at the time, but it was so disappointing. And Moonshaped Pool is, as you say, astounding.
Well, it's a new Radiohead for sure. It's
cosmic, richest albums ever.
Yeah, it's warmer. It's a different approach for them. I feel like King of Limbs just kind of took the reliance on colder electronics, just to use a very blanket phrase.
And this is why it took me so long to get into the album before it.
In Rainbows.
Yeah, they kept kind of paring down. And I think they felt guilty about sort of the Baroque richness of, the two albums, Kid A and Easyac, and certainly Hail to the Thief.
Yeah, no, I mean, Hail to the Thief
is a very textured album.
I think Hail to the Thief could have come out after OK Computer. That's where it sits almost, stylistically. It's kind of they move back a little bit pre-Kid A on that album. And it's one of my top three Radiohead albums for sure. But then you get in Rainbows, which I always liked. You didn't like it right away, but you finally came around. And then you get King of Limbs, which is this it sounds like a lot of B-sides. Some of their B-sides are sort of just less interesting or
just throw away. Yeah, I know.
Less developed.
I have collected a lot of their B-sides. Yep. It does. It's not even as good as the B-sides on any of those records.
Well, I mean, The Trickster is a B-side. How good is that song?
Right.
Yeah, they just sound incomplete. They sound a little bit like sketches. It just doesn't usually quite land well enough. And then I thought they were gone too long. And then out of nowhere, Moonshaped Pool comes out and they just reinvent themselves. And it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful album. And big course correction there for sure. For sure.
Huge one. Huge one.
Can you think of any other before we sign off? I mean, there's others. I know this is one episode where a lot of listeners will
let's invite listeners to give us their course corrections.
And maybe we'll do a course corrections too somewhere down the road.
Post them on Facebook.
Course corrections two, the return. This time it's personal.
Return. Actually,
no, this time it's about.
It's real.
This time it's about you. It's all about you. You narcissistic listeners out there. No.
New course corrections for the new millennium.
Oh, yeah. This is how we correct.
This is how we correct.
All right. Anyway, thank you, Paul Stolt, for a wonderful idea on a chat. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this different episode. Let me remind you. Let me just drop all humility. Let me remind you that my Voivod book is coming out. I'm so proud of it. I want to mention Patrick Crawford. This is the guy that worked on the layout with me from the very beginning. And I'm credited as a co-author of the layout in the copyright page, simply because a lot of the ideas were mine. But he facilitated. And this book would not be anything like it is without Patrick Crawford. So I just want to give him a heads up. He's the one that did the Destination Onward cover. It took over, kind of tag teamed with Scott Hoffman, who both of these guys are in a band called Knight, N-I-T-E. I just want to mention these guys because they've made my books look so good. Patrick Crawford, big deal. Got to give him props. But my Voivod book, it's I'm so proud of it. It looks so good. I think it reads really well. Want you all to check it out if you have any interest. It's an expensive book. It's $45. It's weighty. It's costing a lot to send to fans overseas, but I think it's going to be worth it for all Voivodians. I'm just not trying to make a buck here. I'm simply telling you, I can't wait for other Voivod fans to see this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. The band loves it, so I think that's a good sign. You can find that at radicalresearch.org/Voivod. Next episode, one of the promised ones from a couple episodes ago where we let out the next five. Next episode is going to be us grappling with a band called Dark Millennium, which has come up often with our listeners. They keep asking us, when's the Dark Millennium show? When's the Dark Millennium show? And I keep saying, probably when I finally get into Dark Millennium, and probably finally when Hunter gets into Dark Millennium, because you and I know this band. They're German, right? We've never really spent a ton.
Tim got us into them.
Tim got us into them, but how into them are you? Because I don't own anything. I've
I'm
listened to.
pretty into it. I'm quite into them now.
Well, why haven't you come to me and said, why don't we do the Dark Millennium show? I'm going to put this on you. I'm going to blame this on you for the listeners,
Like,
because
hey,
I'm
man,
not.
have I ever played this band called Mew for you?
Oh, you motherfucker.
You son of a bitch.
Okay, so the second album, we're going to cover the two albums from the first two, 92 and 93. Just seems like the place to go. So I'm more of a novice on this band than you are. I think that'll be kind of a fun approach. It's going to be covering Ashore, the Celestial Burden from 92 and Diana Reed Peace from 93. This should be a lot of fun. 1993 album, alert. Ding, ding, ding.
Heyo.
93 is back. The 1993 bat signal, yeah. This is how we 1993.
This is how we 1993.
Could you please dance my dance?